All right, it's 5 o'clock. I'm going to go ahead and call our September 16th, 2024 pre-council to order. We have open session, closed session, open session. So right now we'll start with our open session, which is a work session with our LIUNA Local 955. So Andrew, I'm just going to kick it to you, I assume. Or your, I'm assuming I could give it to Scotty or who else?
Of course,
me. Okay.
I'm with Holly Stubbs. I'm one of the union reps here for LIUNA 955. I represent the city's Parks and Rec department. So I was really hoping that we could kind of do this work session under better circumstances, but I do hope this work session kind of moves us in a better direction, that we can be more amicable, better pleasant circumstances at the end of this than where we start now. However, to do so, we need to address some of the issues that are kind of clogging up the room at the moment. So the list of the concerns that we bring to your attention are by no means the only issues that we as employees of the City of Columbia face on a daily basis, but these are certainly some of the more egregious ones that we find of issue. First among them is the city's management refusal to bargain in good faith during the current wage opener. We will go over each of these items in detail, but as an appetizer, I was hoping that I could direct your attention to one of the handouts that we have provided for you, if you mind passing these around. This is the current counter proposal that city management gave to us at our last meeting over our wage opener. If you could, you can look through them, and you can see on each item how many of these are each kind of disdain or a lack of the regard for the concerns of not only us as employees, but also the employees that we represent. How many are rejected offhandedly or with a flippant justification of management rights. Secondly, we have representatives from the city's water distribution workers, just one of the extremely vital services that we as the employees execute upon a daily basis. Many of them were hoping to be here today, but they're out fixing seven water main breaks right now.
Four active maybe before we, so we had a lot of people and then show up tonight who are out fixing main breaks right now. So.
Yeah, and that's a commonality for us. I mean, a lot of times we are working behind the scenes to make sure the city runs as best as it can, and it feels like that's not oftentimes recognized in a way that we would hope it would be. Finally, we noticed that the city's wage compression proposal is not on tonight's city council meeting agenda. Not only has the process been overly delayed, but has failed on multiple accounts to fix the issues that the city initially set out. It does nothing to prevent any of the long-term issues that the union and membership initially identified during the process. Now, before we get too much in the weeds of compression, since that's the big thing, I'm sure all of us are out, we need to go back to item one. So, primarily that being the handout that I gave you goes over, once again, the wage opener that we've discussed previously. Feel free to correct my math, and it's kind of hard for me to count above 10 with my boots on. But of the 21 individual items that we have listed on this proposal, over half have been rejected citing management rights, or a flat-out refusal, usually with the language of it not being an open item and a refusal to even discuss it in negotiations. Now, I mean, we're all fairly familiar with the negotiating process, and we understand that there's a give and take, but when you reject offhandedly more than half the proposals we put forward, it doesn't really set the mood for reconciliation or finding common ground. It's not usually the best foot to put forward. It also doesn't bode well when item four, a proposed restructure in the current clothing allowances, which has been overwhelmingly opposed by membership and removed from several previous CBAs, is put back again as an olive branch to appease us. Moreover, if we look at items 9D, 9E, and 9I, you'll see that these are also rejected in a roundabout manner, saying that they are works in progress or ongoing discussions, which in the case of water distribution employees is essentially tantamount to killing the negotiation, often which Connor will be able to discuss later. Finally, the one item that management did deign to discuss with us was a 1% adjustment to the step scale that represented that us as represented workers utilize, along with a single step increase. Effectively, that means a combined 3% wage increase, which is pretty measly. As you can see, that it's actually a 0.5% less than what the unrepresented workers will be receiving in the city. I don't know, at one point city management decided that there were first and second class citizens within their employee ranks, and that would be a genuine question I'd like to put forward to them. But for us and what the union represents, equality is the bare minimum. It's not a requirement. It's not something we strive for. It is the only thing we accept at entry level. Equality among everybody. Now I'll hand it over to Connor Fox, one of our stewards from water distribution, to discuss issues with his constituents.
All right, thanks, Matt. Good evening. My name is Connor Fox, as Matt had said. I'm a water distribution operator 2. I just kind of want to give you a little bit of backstory of how we got into this position. We in Water Distribution, we signed cards in to join the local 955 in late June of 2023. As a group, we decided to join the union because we felt unheard and we felt often ignored by our then current representation and by the city. It was clear to us from the beginning that city management was delaying the process and attempting to cause attrition through that delay. After persisting for 8 months, we had reached a complicated agreement that allowed Water Distribution workers into the 955. We had agreed then, in good faith, to postpone our negotiations of our wages, benefits, and our working conditions until the wage opener of 2024. So now that we are here in the wage opener of 2024, city management is refusing to bargain over the majority of our proposals. They're using these union-busting tactics to undermine our constitutional rights as workers. And I will be back in future slides, but for right now, I'm going to turn it over to Scotty.
So this is a copy of our previous contract, which was approved on October 1st, 2020, and it ran through September 30th, 2023. Under that contract, we did get the union representation rights changed, the representation and disciplinary actions changed, and tool allowance changed. It happened during the wage over, not during the contract year, which is different from what they're saying this year in bargaining. The city's current bargaining position is that all workplace concerns that, if addressed, could result in policy and or CBA changes happen during the contract cycle cannot be discussed in bargaining. Therefore, the union wishes to advocate for its members and tells us that we need to make every issue a public issue that city council addresses and has a fight in the public arena rather than a meeting. Does city council want to spend time discussing whether to increase food allowance, hazard pay, lunch breaks for bus drivers, seniority concerns, DOT physicals, or sick leave usage?
Yeah, so just to really underscore that point, so the proposals or the handouts that you have on the table, a lot of the items that they are rejecting, well, our point is that these are the same types of items that city council voted on to accept in September 2021, which was 1 year after the contract was ratified. Just like right now, we are in the first wage opener after the contract was ratified last year. So the city's actions in outright rejecting and claiming management rights and that these are not open items, it's a significant deviation from past bargaining practice, which shows that things are getting worse, not better at the city for workers. So the city, I'm gonna go through this really quick because it's a lot of emails back and forth, but the city, when we sent an information request, when they started doing these types of things, so that was on the 21st, we got a response saying that this was too burdensome of a request. We asked for all of their past proposals so that we could show them that their practice had changed. They said it was too burdensome. And then, to preempt us, they said that this was closed under sunshine, which meant that we could not sunshine them even though we were party to those negotiations. To make it less burdensome, we specifically asked it to be changed to the last wage opener. That was on the 30th. This is some basic stuff on sunshine law. We did not get any response until our attorney, over a week later, had to threaten legal action, in which they finally gave us the response to our information, which we weren't able to provide in this presentation today, because they gave it to us at 4:49 p.m. this last Friday. This is the city dragging things out and stopping the flow of information to make this as hard as possible. So when you question why are you not voting on wage compression tonight, it's this type of tactics. It's waiting and delaying and making things as hard as possible to have a real conversation at the table. Now we're going to pass to Brad with Water Distribution.
My name is Brad Stevenson. I'm a crew leader with Water Distribution. Lyanna Local 955's original position was to reward employees for years of service, not time in certain classifications. While the city has essentially fixed some of the areas missed by time in class rather than years of service, there are still some serious concerns, including the following. Solid waste collection employees, which we struggle to recruit and retain, still do not have access to a step scale and their wages are majorly compressed. An example is Pierre Whitfield.
Pierre, you want
to? Been with the city in solid waste collection for 15 years. He will make $26.98 as a result of wage compression negotiation, a 51% increase. And William James, who was hired in 2022, will make the same, $26.98 an hour. In some cases, crew leaders in public works will make less than equipment operators because they took a promotion, and equipment operators who report to them remain in their classification. The city is rewarding employees staying in one position rather than taking leadership growth opportunities. Jonah Galloway, who recently transferred from Water and Light to Water Distribution, who lacks a CDL and has no experience in water distribution, makes 3 cents less than myself, who's a crew leader in water distribution and holds a CDL, almost a decade of experience in a DS3 water license. I'm two pay grades higher than Galloway. And this is not anything against Jonah, personally. We're happy for him that he makes the money. That's a pretty big difference in experience and pay grade. To be making 3 cents difference.
The city administration, through malice or incompetence, denied the release of records, their past proposal for the union's presentation to the city council that could contextualize the city's massive change in the past practices for wage negotiations. I mean, there's been resolution at this point, as Andrew said. It's like, we have gotten something in return. We have gotten, after threatening legal action, we have gotten what we asked for. But this behavior of animosity and contempt for a fair process could lead to actions that neither of us, especially not the union, wish to engage in. I mean, a lot of us are hardworking people. We want to show up to work. We want to do the best we can. I mean, we're not looking to raise a stink, go to war, do anything like crazy like that, but when you're faced with this sort of opposition at every turn, I mean, you don't leave a lot of room for us to maneuver. Like, these are the things that we're faced to do because of situations that are put against us, not because it's what we want. And I want to put that in, like, I want to emphasize that. It's like, a lot of us just want to do our job. I don't like doing this stuff. I don't like having to argue in front of people or put people down or do any of that stuff. It's not my nature, and I don't think it's in any of our natures, really. It's just kind of a shame. Second point, city administration broke their own word on bargaining our distribution workers' wages, benefits, and working conditions. And like you pointed out, they're one of our most valuable members of this community. I mean, all of us, in our own ways, serve the city at large and keep it working its own way. I certainly don't like being thirsty, and I'm glad that these guys continue to work despite the really untenable situations that they're often faced with, especially after these breakdowns in communication. Thirdly, if city council instructed city staff to ensure that long-term employees were being rewarded, it is unclear that staff has taken those instructions to heart. I would like to emphasize this, like, we've heard the pro-employee rhetoric from both this council and members of city management, but unfortunately these events have exemplified the lack of conviction on embracing these sentiments, which does nothing but build antipathy between the union, between the employees and the union and the organization that is supposed to represent the best aspects of the city that we all care about. And then, I mean, I think it all caps off with the city administration is just bargaining bad faith, and it doesn't do well for the city, it doesn't do well for us, it doesn't serve anybody in any meaningful way.
So, how do we fix this? So, before I get into what the slide is going to be saying, I do want to add just a little bit more in about who the union represents. It's the majority of 955 workers represented through the city are essential workers. Speaking as water distribution workers, I know that we play a critical role in ensuring the city of Columbia's access to clean and safe drinking water, to its fire suppression systems. We prevent contamination and ensure the reliability of the system for the community. We don't view ourselves as, we are a part of this union and we are happy that the union has been helping us with this, but we really, at the core of it, we view ourselves as stewards to this resource. We're just trying to, one, get home safely back to our families, and two, just trying to do our parts in our jobs to ensure the health and safety of our community. So as such, you know, we're required to obtain and keep through ongoing training, multiple licenses and certificates. There's a significant physical demand in our work, and we frequently work in hazardous conditions. So I know that AWWA, American Water Works Association, they've declared that the American water infrastructure has entered the replacement era. You know, there's materials and methods used in water distribution that vary from city to city and from year to year. The experienced workers are required to pass this valued knowledge down to the newer workers, but like the mains, those experienced workers are retiring. The factors that I mentioned earlier make it hard to hire and retain workers who are cut out to learn this trade, but it's nearly impossible when we cannot negotiate pay and working conditions in good faith. Now, I've spoken a lot there on the issues of water distribution workers, but all the essential workers that are represented by 955 have very similar issues, if not the same issues, and it's all made worse by the fact that the city management will not bargain in good faith with us. So, kind of bringing this all together now, we ask the city council will instruct the city manager to bargain in good faith with LIUNA Local 955 members on the wage opener and not to deviate from past practice in allowing economic and non-economic issues to be discussed during wage openers. We ask that they create a report that accurately costs out the effects of the city's wage compression proposal and to set up a work session with Local 955 stewards and staff to draft an ordinance to address city administration's union busting and refusal to bargain in good faith. So thank you guys for hearing us out. I know we kind of tag-teamed that, but we all feel very passionate on this, and we'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions for my staff? Yeah, Val.
Has this PowerPoint been made available to City Council? Could we have a copy of this?
It's uploaded, so to whatever the system is, I think Sheila should be able to get you a copy, and if not, we can mail it to you.
Thanks.
Yeah. And you listed that the wage compression is not on our council meeting agenda, but did you guys have a vote on that aspect of the proposal with staff?
Yeah, we had a vote and a discussion about it, but we've yet to see what the language. Usually we get a spreadsheet with where folks' wages actually end up, and that wasn't provided to us.
Okay.
So normally I can do that math myself, but with wage compression negotiations, I don't have access to the job histories and all the complicated formulas that we have to go.
Yeah.
We did, I would just do it, because we don't want to toss things out ourselves. But right now, we're waiting on the city.
Okay.
And I'll add on to the end of that, in a situation where we're becoming increasingly less trustworthy of the process, we're less likely to simply jump in and say we trust you. I mean, I've always been a big fan of trust but verify, but being asked, especially after all the stuff that we're going through, to simply just go forth and take what you get instead of being able to double check, make sure, and even on the basics of just proofreading, making sure there's no clerical mistakes, things that happen because we're all human, is like not being able to look over that stuff is pretty detrimental to our own process.
And I know one of these compression issues that Brad had spoken on, that had actually arose later in the bargaining process, so we were actually done kind of bargaining our bid, and that had arose for us, so it was something that we really couldn't even have addressed in that as well.
And then my additional follow-up to that, so you originally received the wage compression proposal in January, like we had talked about last year, and we still don't have it. You guys have not settled on, your members have not, have your members seen the proposal, or just stewards?
No.
Okay. And then with that, from 2020 to 2023, what's the difference between, is it the same type of contract for 20 to 2023, and then 23 to, are we 28? I forgot what the end is, this current one is. Is it the same type of contract, or is it a different agreement type?
Still a collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. Okay. I just want to make sure, clarification.
No difference.
Okay.
And we were not informed that wage openers were going to be any different moving forward.
Okay. So, okay.
Be different if we weren't, obviously.
Right. Okay. Other questions for staff before we go close? Yeah, Lisa.
I have a philosophical question. I have an uncle who was a shop steward for the Teamsters, and he told me that he always said it was really important to not be anti-management and to have and for them to do really great work for the pay. I'd like to just get a little bit of a philosophical feeling about that, because this came across to me as a bit anti-management.
Sure. So I'll tell you, you can ask the alderman at the city of Centralia. I've gone to the city council in Centralia to do a public comment to applaud them for how collaborative and fantastic the bargaining process has been. I've had similar experiences with the city of Kirksville. I think the big thing here is if you ask any of these guys about their frontline supervisors or even some of their directors, there aren't going to be any complaints. But when it comes down to when we're in negotiations and this is what we get, that's where we are.
Right. Other questions for staff? No. I appreciate you coming out to us.
So
yeah. Now, slowly walk out while I read my list of closed session things. All right. I move for the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A, 1B of City Hall to discuss legal actions, causes of action, or litigation involving a public governmental body and confidential or privileged communications between a public governmental body or its representatives and its attorneys pursuant to Section 610.0211 of the Riot Statutes of Missouri. Leasing, purchase, or sale of real estate by a public governmental body where public knowledge of the transaction might adversely affect the legal consideration, therefore pursuant to Section 610.0212 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri, and preparation, including any discussions or work product on behalf of a public governmental body or its representatives for negotiations with employee groups pursuant to Section 610.0219, Revised Statutes of Missouri. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Waterman. All right, Ms. Meyer.
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady.
Sorry.
Mr. Foster.
Here. Yes.
Mr. Waterman.
Yes.
Ms. Peter. All right, I'm going to kick it over to Shane, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Take it away, Shane.
Good evening. As you all know, it's been a while since we've been in front of you about this, but the city's been working with the stakeholder group, which includes the Chamber of Commerce, Boone County, University of Missouri, among others, to develop enhancements to MoDOT's Improve I-70 project. If you remember, the city had an interested parties meeting in May of 2023 and a public hearing on June 20th, 2023 to discuss enhancements to the I-70-63 interchange. And since that time, a lot's changed. MoDOT's project was rolled into the Improve I-70 project, which covers essentially the entire state. Therefore, there will be enhancements opportunities at every major crossing of I-70 within Boone County. Also, the design build proposal for the I-70-63 interchange has changed dramatically and impacts areas along the I-70 and US 63 corridors that were not envisioned in the middle of 2023. There's some roundabouts, some underpasses, some things like that. We thought it was just I-70 and 63 and how that was going to be impacted. Therefore, we thought it was important to provide council with an update. Laurel Harrington with Lockmiller Group has been guiding us through all the ups and downs and is here tonight to provide us with an update and where we go from here. So I'll turn it over to Laurel.
Okay. Thank you. This document here shows all the different projects. So instead of being just at the one spot there, kind of mid place there, now we've got all these different projects all over the place. So the ones in the blue, in the red boxes, are where we are going to touch the project with enhancement. And there's all those projects, and then here at Route Z, we've got some minor enhancement of the existing infrastructure, so maybe painting the rail. But all the other projects are bigger enhancement projects, and we'll show you some of those scope elements. So this is a document that we're using. This is my older presentation, actually. So I'm going to go back to this because I think we don't have my updated presentation here. All of the enhancements that we're looking at are things that are shown in this rendering. So there's two major bridges that look like this, and it shows all the different kind of enhancement components that we're looking at. Enhanced fencing, lighting. Four liner is actually a standard for MoDOT, so that'll be signage, a bridge kind of panel idea. And then these piers at the end, the light box at the top. Our signature elements that we're able to customize the panel in there and change that panel to actually incorporate what might be relevant for the particular intersection. So as we think about the future beyond these projects, how does that move forward west to other areas?
He's going to bring up the new one.
same picture.
Yeah.
That one is.
It should show, yeah, if you go past that one and that one. Okay, yeah, here we go. Yeah, so same picture at the top there, just a kind of different view. There's going to be a solid wall underneath the bridge, so you'll be have more of that kind of nice ashlar pattern. And then we're going to coat all these elements with a nice warm tone. It doesn't exactly show here, it's more gray in these images, but a nice warm tone. And then that light box that's shown kind of at an enlargement there, we have an opportunity to design that as a custom piece and change that, panel in there to remove the location.
The PowerPoint at the bottom.
So is the panel in the light box what we decided on as the custom piece, or is that?
It's yet to be determined. Okay. Yeah. So what we're showing in there is the Baroque, and it just says something that's local. So what we're using this document for, this is really kind of a document that we're using to communicate with the design build team of all the different components that are part of the project. So the two bridges incorporate most of the components, and then we take some of these other pieces and are part of some of the other more minor projects. But once we determine that look and feel of these bridges, then that can be repeated west as future projects come in line with the pre-70. Yeah. Some more of the elements, looking at lighting, signage, using precedent imagery to communicate to the design build team. Some of these elements will go into their process, be designed by the design build team and incorporated into their process. Next slide, please. Just more of that so you can kind of see how we're communicating. Some of the roundabouts then have the opportunity to have a special finish on the what's called the truck apron that's around the outside edge, and then all the splitter islands, which are those concrete islands that help separate traffic flow. Those would have both the color and an ashlar, a stamped pattern, and a color. And so we're determining all of those features. And then these are just some examples of roundabouts. What we're really focusing on right now is integrated components. Those are things that literally attach and touch any of the infrastructure that MoDOT is building, the bridges, things that have to be connected. And then there's non-integrated enhancement, which are opportunities to do things within the inside of the roundabouts. And those don't have such a critical path related to their drawings. So these are just some examples of things that might be able to be considered for roundabouts in the future that start to reflect a unique character for where they're located. Next slide. So when we think about when we look at that, we're looking at kind of what we're calling phase one, which is projects that are both integrated. And so there's a subtotal there up at the top left, 1.7 for the integrated components. So that's things that are part of those bridges and attached. And then what we're calling kind of phase three projects, non-integrated, and those are other features that we may have within those roundabouts and other things that aren't on that critical path. That 2.1 is really kind of an allowance because we can decide more or less what happens in each of the roundabout circles, and so that's kind of a pot of money, just trying to get to a total. So looking at what we're looking at right now for projects that are within this MoDOT phase of work, it could be 3.8, but again, the critical piece is at 1.7. Phase two projects are things that happen farther west of this work, and trying to plan that all out so that we can understand a total overall.
So really what you all will see next is we're working with MoDOT on an enhancement agreement that would come to you all. We previously did a municipal agreement, and it was based on the 70 and 63 project as well. So that will come back to you. We have to revise that because the scope has changed so much. So you'll see both of those agreements come back. But I think the big change here is because it's so much bigger and, the cost of that has changed so much, we need to do it in phases. So my recommendation to the stakeholder group was to do what you have to do in phase one and what you have to do in phase two, so you don't have to go backwards. They're going to put some railing up there. Let's put the pretty railing up. Mm-hmm. They're going to put in the hardscape of the roundabout, the truck aprons. Let's do that the way we want it. We can come back and landscape it later. And so that's really what those costs show. But the big thing here is there's going to be a phase three, that, and it can be as big, as small as we want to, but that's really where it starts to, you put in some of those prettier elements that maybe everybody envisioned from the start.
Yeah. And those really could be phased out also, you know, there's phases within that, you know, within that. You don't have to do all the roundabouts all at one time.
Just a quick clarification, when you say phase two of the future I-70 projects, that's like MoDOT's 4A, correct?
Correct. Okay. That is 63 essentially west.
Yeah, all those.
Okay. I just want to clarify.
Yeah, there's a lot of bridges.
Well, because a lot more is in phase one than we originally thought.
And we don't even know until they get into that, until they get to the same stage we're kind of at now with that. We don't know which bridges they're going to replace, with, you know, what exactly they're going to do.
Or if any of those
drive
outer
under
roads.
Some and tell you that they're going to replace them, but they haven't said that yet.
Well, and all those outer roads that they talked about when they were doing the CAG meetings. Yeah, Don.
So with that, what kind of a time frame are we looking, since part of this is going to be phase four, we're looking five, six years down the road. I don't remember the exact timeline.
No, so
that's been changed.
That phase 4A in MoDOT's Improve I-70 project, so 63 to the west.
Right.
They're sending that out, going through this, starting the same process they're in right now, like in the fall, almost a year from now. You know.
So we would anticipate then the three phases being spread over 18 months, 24 months?
I don't know their construction schedule.
Right.
So that phase is bigger, so it's going to take a little longer to build, I would say.
And then the source of the funding?
So that's
us.
That's the question. And so, and if, Mayor, if you don't mind, being that the chamber kind of took the lead on some of this process.
Oh, yeah, let's have them lead that.
No, but I'll have Matt talk about what we're doing in order to raise funds in order to assist with the project.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want me to do this?
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that this originally started off as you know, was originally just I-70 and 63. That's where we got involved in starting to talk with the city and the county about how do we make this something that Columbia can be proud of and to start something that eventually, hopefully, I-70 will be turned into, knowing believing that was going to be a ways down the road. Well, when the plans came in, everything changed with I-70 and 63 except for the flyovers. 100% of it changed whenever that started coming through. And then also the governor signed off for all of I-70. So this has really ramped this up from that. We got involved with that because what we want to make sure of, as I believe everybody does, and the thing that we hear a lot of times, we have a wonderful community that's sometimes hidden by our interstate. And how can we start taking our interstate in this once-a-generation project and upgrade it to where it really starts showing what Columbia is about and really helps people know when they're in Columbia. And so that's what we want to do because it is once a generation. It's a 50-year project. Most of us sitting in this room won't be around the next time they do this. So at least hopefully I won't be. And so that's where we started working with that. We teamed up with Amy Schneider with the CBB. She and I put together a task force to start with 70 and 63. Really worked together to start taking a look at the beautification of that. With that, the university came in on board as well. Robin Winokur's here, our chair of the board of curators, to really help start that process. So we started going out, we sat down with DeCarlin and the county and what kind of public funds looked at this and what do private funds need to look at this. So with that, the university had stepped up and put some dollars forward. We went out and started doing a raise with our private businesses. So you do have truly a public-private partnership going here with these dollars. It does need to start moving into something a little bit different because the project has turned into something different than what we started off with. But we've had a number of businesses put in around $200,000. We do have more ask. We are also going to be, as this expands, working on that ask also to get our private companies involved in this. This is something that's been important. The feedback we've received from our companies that we have talked to has been very positive about wanting to be a part of this and wanting to see something here and taking advantage of the opportunity we have.
So the private side, though, yeah. Matt said the $200,000 in total, the private side so far has been a little bit under $1 million.
Yeah, so a total, between the university and the private and some other things in there, a little less than $1 million right there, but like I said, we do have a couple of other asks out there on top of whatever you, the city, move forward with. And, also the county.
Yeah, So if we talk about numbers, so so the university and the private businesses were around about 795,000.
Yeah.
I think with the county, I think the county said 500,000.
Yeah.
And then the city, we had initially said, I want to say we said a million or a million five, depending on what the need was.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're looking at for that first phase. The second part is that we really need to talk about, you know, the second and third phase, and what does that look like, and how do we go out and try to get more stakeholders to the table to help with that fund.
So one of the things we even talked about at our last meeting last week, actually, was, you know, how do we take what our stakeholders have been doing on the funding side and expand that even larger, something a little bit more than what it has been. So maybe a task force or something with a couple of the different stakeholder groups, but and people to go out and work that process in our community as a whole. We also have with it going on I-7, we really focused on businesses that 70-63 corridor focus in on. With this focusing now all of I-70, that can also start expanding what businesses are located on all of I-70 that we can talk to. Not saying everybody will, not saying that we're not trying to tie their feet to it, but you know, hopefully they can see that as, hey, this is, you know, this really upgrades the intersection in our area of where we're located, and we'd love to be a part of that.
And remind us some of the feedback you've heard from when going out for some of those private donations. Have you found that more would be interested if they saw what it was? You know what I mean? Like, once it's kind of starting, they saw what it is.
Yeah.
You get that feeling?
Yeah, we have gotten some of that feedback. The nice thing is we have new drawings, thanks to Laurel and her group. We have some new drawings that we can start showing. Because the sped up part of this with phase four, the MoDOT's 4A, whatever.
Yeah.
The challenge is the first part's not going to be done.
Right.
With those to really be able to see that. But they can see the construction being turned, the dirt being turned, some things going that. But with the renderings, that is also very helpful. You know, a lot of our businesses also give feedback of they're really interested about, A, making sure that we have a beautiful entry points into our community, multiple entry points into our community. A lot of feedback is making sure those stay beautiful moving forward.
Yeah.
And what does that look like?
Yeah. And then my second question, and then Nick. Shane, are any things in the future eligible for, I mean, like some of our transportation sales tax, I mean, some of our funding goes obviously to hardscapes and improvements like this. Can they go to things like this? And then the second is, are there any federal grants that can also go to things like this? Or is it more of it would go to something else we're already planning, and then those dollars we had allocated, we can maybe move to enhancements?
So, you know, we just went through that process to send off a cost share for sidewalks associated with phase one. Sidewalks, there's money to go after.
Yeah.
We'll call that an enhancement.
It's not an enhancement. It's a critical base infrastructure.
I understand. That's what they call it. So, I mean, there's opportunities there. I don't know that there's as many opportunities for beautification. You might know better than I do.
Yeah, not really. You know, stormwater things, that type of thing, but not so much on the beautification side.
Okay. All right. Nick Foster.
I just want to be clear about what we're talking about in terms of which bridges. So this is 63 West, is that right?
63 East is phase one.
Okay.
So
well, from that interchange west, right? We're talking about the bridges from the 6370 interchange west.
East.
Is that right?
East.
First phase. Yeah, first phase. So there's
okay,
right there is that 63 bridge there, and then the flyovers are to the west of it. So we've got that project. We've got the
Hanover,
which has got a roundabout and just an underpass. We've got
Lake of the Woods.
St. Charles Bridge there. And then coming down 63 itself, then there's the couple roundabouts over there, Business Loop, and then the Conley Road one. And then this is the underpass that goes to Sam's. And so each of these projects has more or less...
A little bit of some enhancement opportunity.
Yeah, a little bit of some. The signage is consistent, and then that form liner is consistent. But, you know, really the roundabout, you know, again, it's kind of that internal, non-integrated stuff that we can think about, you know, or less doing, you know, doing more or less in each of those middle sections.
And then there's some money programmed in also for each of the bridge locations to do landscaping on the sides. You know, so again, you kind of, you know, make a judgment call whether that's necessary.
That's more of like the phase three.
Yeah, that's phase three, money, non-integrated. Yeah. You can make a judgment call after the fact and you know, decide to do that. You know, and integrate, understand your maintenance at that point too, how that's going to factor in.
You don't have to do it all at once either.
Right.
Meaning you could do phase 10, come back and do that last roundabout or whatever it was you wanted to do.
Well, I apologize for my directional challenges I have. But St. Charles would be the easternmost, so from there to there.
Yeah, Route Z is the last easternmost one, but they're not going to replace the bridge there. So it's really, they're just going to do some, I think it's just some coating of the bridge, some maintenance stuff there. Yeah.
Okay.
And then phase two would be the westbound side of that you were asking about.
Yeah.
How far out is that going to go? Is that going to go to like Midway?
Boonville.
Not like all the way to the river.
To Roachport.
Roachport, yeah. Okay.
It would tie in there, but.
I mean, as far as what we're talking about it with this,
right?
Ours would be stadium. Would be our last.
Okay,
I think
possibly look at some.
Possibly
of
40.
Yeah.
But I think that the only thing that I mean, like I appreciate having dollars, but I don't have any confidence in the phase two dollar amount because they haven't even talked about what it looks like, and we were so thrown on this one, two new underpasses, three roundabouts. Like these are not things that we planned.
The only difference I'll say about that next phase is some of the reason you see something different here is because there's traffic improvements at 70 and 63. Going west, it is totally about adding an additional lane.
Yeah.
So they're just widening I-70.
But when they did those CAGs, they were talking about adding these extra outer roads.
There might still be some of that on-off ramp
could
stuff.
Be.
Yeah, but from the enhancement piece, our enhancement would be focused really on the bridge. And there might be maybe some splitter islands and things like that, but really the focus would be the bridge. And there's so many bridges that are either, you know, they're just not wide enough to get an additional lane on both sides. And then some of them look like you can get an additional lane, but then they're not high enough. There's not enough clearance. So it's like every single one of them appears
it's
like
gonna be different.
They're going to have to redo it. Yeah.
Right. So the guidance you're looking for from us is to, like, yes, continue, I assume, on this? Because I don't know which rock to look under for your additional money.
Right.
Right. And so the first part is, as we look at the first phase, an agreement will come to you guys pretty soon for that project. And so we're on board with the first phase, and then we need to work and talk about how do we fund the second and third phase. And part of that is maybe looking.
Yeah.
And so let's talk kind of what Matt was saying is there's looking at trying to form committees to actually look at how do we go out and talk to some of our other business partners to say, hey, here's a worthwhile project. Let's see who is willing to contribute and what does that contribution look like.
Okay. And so you'll wait for that guidance at that time for us to do?
Yeah, we'll start that process and we'll ask them. Figure out what that committee looks like. We'll make sure that we're given regular, here's our funding ability, and this, here's what we're looking at moving toward.
And do you want us to do a council-appointed task force?
Matt, which process do you think is best?
You know, I don't know if we got that far on talking about that. I think we can look at one helping with, or if it wants to be a council one. What we originally talked about is the stakeholders in the group ourselves, the university, the county, the city. Maybe bring some names to the table to help put together a task force to start putting together a plan of action. How they want to move forward with that. That way it's not...
It's easier for soliciting funds.
Yeah.
Okay.
That way it's not, you know, myself and Robin and Amy and...
Yeah.
And
Shane.
Shane and your crew that that are doing that.
Yeah.
Bring in some other people into the fold of that conversation.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Any additional questions from council? No? Thank you for continuing to work on this.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your work. Yeah. Thank you to the Chamber and the University. Appreciate the partnership on this. I think it will make a difference. Yeah. All right. Anything else for the good of the group? If not, I will go ahead and adjourn our pre-council and see you guys in like 20 minutes in there. Thank you.